Our next presentation will be by Deborah Ballard Reich, who's from the Elliott School for Communication at Wichita State University. And her presentation will be Grounding Health Communication Initiatives in Cultures and Context, the Argument for a Community-Based Participatory Research Approach.
Good morning. I'm glad you're with us this morning. I am honored by having been asked to be part of this plenary session. I view these presentations as having a couple of different possible outcomes and strategies, one being to talk about cutting-edge new ideas, and another being more what I'll be doing today, which is encouraging us along a path that I see us taking over the last several years and that I want to encourage as an appropriate approach to global public health. As we're all aware, the world is getting appreciably smaller. Increased global mobility, global food distribution, cross-border environmental contamination, increased chemical dependence, etc., are all threats to global public health that don't stop at national boundaries and have the potential to significantly impact large segments of the international community in a very short period of time. The World Health Organization, in response to this reality in 2002, published a report called A Safer Future, Global Public Health Security in the 21st Century, that called for collective international public health action to build a safer future for humanity. As national borders continue to merge and divide in unique and different ways, international collaborations to promote public health at both the macro and micro level become more critical to promoting global public health. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. My experience is as a communication professional. My background is in communication. I'm going to talk to you today with examples from my experiences as a Fulbright scholar in Russia in the mid-90s, continuing with the Tatarstan Women's Health Initiative, the region of Russia where I lived for a year in the 90s, through a women's health survey that we conducted in 2001, through a domestic violence handbook we developed and distributed in 2004, and ongoing to see if our efforts are having any impact in promoting the health of women, but even more importantly than impact, the strategies for interaction and communication. Additionally, in 1998, I was sent by USAID to teach judges in Zimbabwe in a rule of law program. And as those of you who have done USAID programs know, once you're an in-country expert, they utilize your time to the maximum. So I had the opportunity to interact with a number of women's groups as well regarding health promotion and to work in two hospitals while I was there. I will also draw from examples from some of my colleagues who have worked on the development of safe water in Ghana and working with Native American tribes in the United States as well to kind of ground my argument that what I'm seeing is a shift in public health policy toward a more collaborative, involved, engaged approach to participation in the promotion of public health. And that is a strategy that I want to encourage us to continue with. I view communication much more broadly than simply media and marketing campaigns. Communication in global public health deals with intercultural competence, with understanding the views, the perspectives, the beliefs, the attitudes, the values, the socialization that affect not only how our collaborators around the world view reality, but also how they communicate about reality. Often we assume that silence is acceptance, that lack of conversation and engagement is a sign of agreement, and very often in global public health initiatives, this simply isn't so. It's critical that if we want to engage in global public health enterprises, that we understand and ground ourselves in the cultures and contexts in which we hope to have an impact. Consequently, I start with two of my favorite quotations here on the screen about knowing not being enough and the need to go beyond it to create interest and a willingness to act and then to move us to action. The movement to action, of course, is always the challenge with public health. How do we get people to make the changes? How do people get themselves to make the changes that they know that they need to make? And I think a community-based participatory framework has great promise in promoting this, based upon the results of behavior change research in a variety of areas. To begin with, in terms of global public health security, again, one of the foci of the 2007 World Report, global public health security minimizes vulnerability to acute public health events that endanger the collective health of populations. This is critical in order to promote global public health and has the potential to impact economies, politics, trade, tourism, goods and services, as well as domestic stability. Health promotion within the context of promoting global public health security must enable people to increase control over and improve their own health, identify and realize aspirations to satisfy needs and change their environment. It takes a perspective that health is a resource in everyday life rather than an outcome, and emphasizes social and personal resources and physical capabilities. The conclusion then being, based on the Ottawa chapter in 1986, that health promotion is not just a responsibility of the health sector, but goes beyond healthy lifestyles to healthy well-being, a strategy that must include all of us at the most micro level, as well as governments and institutions at the largest macro levels. Communication, as I said, to me is much broader than media and marketing campaigns. It's about getting into cultures, understanding perspectives, understanding philosophies, and understanding the appropriate communication strategies within contexts. Therefore, to echo Healthy People 2010, I agree that successful health promotion efforts increasingly rely on multidimensional interventions to reach diverse audiences about complex health concerns. And to parrot my buck and parrot, health communication best supports health promotion when multiple communication channels are used to reach specific audience segments with information that is appropriate and relevant to them. Beyond reaching audience segments with information that is appropriate and relevant, though, I think we need to take a more collaborative approach and realize that the perspective on the ground is equally as legitimate and important in promoting public health as the perspective from the researchers above. Effective public health interventions from a community-based participatory approach assume that the best, most effective interventions will adopt an audience-centered perspective, reflect audiences' preferred formats, channels, and contexts for receiving information, and the global development of media worldwide will have a significant impact on this, things from cell phones to internet usage, as well as traditional media like television, radio, and newspapers. However, interventions are most effective when they are conceptualized and developed by individuals with specific knowledge of the culture in which the interventions are expected to be integrated. The media use habits of the citizens in those cultures, the language preferences, and the connotative meaning of communication within those cultures as well. The World Health Organization program for water for safe water that resulted in a publication in 2002, argued that the participatory approach, a grounded approach that involves community members as full partners in the development, identification, and implementation of issues, shows great promise in supporting global public health initiatives, and that as a strategy, it's one that we need to pursue further. There are two models that are currently in existence that I'd like to expand upon just slightly to make an argument with respect to the perspective that I'm taking. One is the P process steps in strategic communication that was developed by Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in their health communication partnerships and published first in 2003 with a lot of follow-up work since that time. They basically view the process of strategic communication with respect to public health as being a five-step process: analysis, strategic design, development and testing, implementation monitoring, and evaluation and planning. The second and third stages, strategic design and development and testing, in their model are indicated as where participation occurs. And the fourth, implementation and monitoring, is where capacities are strengthened. One of the things that I believe happens with this particular model is that it still encourages the vertical or top-down approach to communication, dissemination, and implementation that Jay was talking about earlier, in that we integrate partners after we have already analyzed the situation, after we have decided what they need to do, after we have decided what the appropriate interventions are, and then the question that we engage them with is, how do we best implement these decisions within your culture? And I would argue they start too far into the process. Step one needs to be engagement of the communities where the communities are. Behavior change research shows us that the best place to encourage people to change their behavior is around problems that they have identified as critically important. And I think that public health initiatives need to take this grounded participatory approach more and expand this model, as well as the next one I will talk about, in that direction. The second model is the health marketing model that the CDC has proposed, and the four P's of the health marketing model, the goal being to create, communicate, and deliver health information and interventions using customer-centered and science-based strategies. Unfortunately, in implementation, customer-centered and science-based is often based on epidemiological research, sociological research, and demographic research that are often largely removed from the real lives of the individuals whose behavior one hopes to affect. The model itself has four components: product, price, place, and promotion, to which I would like to add two other components that precede those: participation, In other words, a grounded approach within the context that one hopes to change behavior. Talking with people, getting them on board as partners, identifying their perception of context, identifying their perception of need, identifying their priorities, strategies, etc. for change, and then involving them in the second step, which would be problem solving. How do we best get to the goals you hope to achieve from here? Only after that kind of footwork is done, and many, many people do this kind of footwork, are we ready to go to product, price, place, and promotion. It's simply that within our models, I don't think we yet reflect as strongly as we can a participatory approach that truly is grounded in the cultures that we hope to impact. From the health marketing perspective, with respect to the CDC's initiative, and Jay could talk about this more effectively than I could, a number of critical issues are important. A multidisciplinary practice that promotes the use of marketing research to educate, motivate, and inform the public health and health messages, an integration of the traditional marketing field with public health research theory and practice, a complex framework that provides guidance for designing health interventions, campaigns, etc., and a broad range of strategies and techniques that can be used to create synergy among public health research, communication messages, and health behaviors. Again, I think both of these models have great merit, but what I have learned through my experiences working in Russia is that not being grounded in culture can lead to some significant errors. For example, when I first went to Russia in 1995 on a Fulbright Fellowship, I had the pleasure of starting to hear women's stories about their concerns about public health. I received a small grant from my university in 1998 to go back and do some preliminary focus groups to try to tease out what some of the issues were that affected women. We did some collaboration with some partners in Russia, and we came up with some questions that we thought would help us really get a handle on issues of concern in the Tatarstan Republic, the specific region of Russia where I was working. One of the first questions we asked in our focus groups was, what do you think are the most critical problems facing women with respect to their health today? No one could respond. Culturally, I was not aware that women in Russia were not comfortable speaking for one another, for other women, or generalizing to the status of women beyond their own experiences. After the first focus group, I met with my collaborators again and said, okay, this is clearly not working, what do we need to do? And my modification during that first group proved to be more effective. I could talk to women about what their concerns and issues were. I could talk to them about the concerns of their friends and the experiences of their family members. And then they could give me rich, complex information. But when I asked them to generalize, an approach that would be very common to women in the United States and much of the Western world, they were simply not comfortable doing so. Grounding yourself in the culture is critical to success. In assessing these models, I think they're very laudable in a lot of ways. I applaud the participation of stakeholders and the integral place that stakeholders play in these models. However, I think it needs to be more participatory, more grounded, and more focused. And there's a lot of research and theory already existing in public health that advance this perspective. I think that the operationalization on participant involvement that comes through demographic and sociological research, as in what kind of media do people use, how often do they use it, what do they think is trustworthy and credible, gives extremely valuable information, but it doesn't tell us anything about how we need to frame messages in order to appropriately reach audiences where they live, where they are, with a perspective that will be strategically useful and helpful to them. Largely, again, it's easy to make these models top-down, focus on the information that we have to disseminate and how best to get it across. And I think that approach inherently misses a couple of opportunities. It misses the opportunity to build stakeholder capacity for self-management, and it misses the opportunity to enhance change initiatives by creating participant ownership. As I've mentioned before, behavior change research is starting to show pretty clearly that when people own change initiatives, when they feel that they have created them, developed them, and have a vested interest in their success, they're more likely to engage in sustainable change. Principal assumptions of the perspective that I take are that health interventions are most effective when audiences identify their own need for change, actively select methods and approaches that they believe will enable them to change, and are empowered and supported to make the desired changes. This is consistent with the work of Huff and Klein in 1999. The principles of health ethics published by Public Health Leadership also take us a long way in understanding this perspective and supporting this view. When they argue that respect for the rights of individuals and communities is paramount in public health integration, ensuring an opportunity for community member input, empowering disenfranchised members of communities, ensuring access, and seeking as well as providing information and obtaining community consent for implementation. Further, they argue that we need to anticipate and respect diverse values, beliefs, and cultures within the development of public health initiatives and engage in collaborations and affiliations that build public trust and institutional effectiveness. Unfortunately, they argue that historically this has not always been the case, that many research designs have not adequately or appropriately involved communication or community members, and that they've resulted in the negative perception of research locally and globally in terms of public health initiatives. Common problems include things like perceptions that the research is irrelevant, that the methodology is inappropriate for the context, that research data and findings are not given back. What is the benefit to the community of engaging in research? That communities are over-researched, that they're coerced, that they feel researched upon rather than partners in process. Sometimes they feel lied to, that they feel there's an insensitivity to their concerns and local issues. In short, their perspectives, their view of the world, their way of engaging in communication, and that the benefits to communities are often minimal or non-existent. These principles for ethics are principles, and these reactions to public health research and community-based research are reactions to a structure that disenfranchises and does not include participants as critical stakeholders in the public health initiatives that we hope to encourage them to take part in. Community-based participatory research is a strategy that I think can be very effective, and that's what I've been talking about to this point. With the Global or Tartessian Women's Health Initiative, we engaged in an interview study in 2001 of over 1,000 women. Our survey questionnaire, we had 20 partners on our steering committee. Our survey questionnaire was 152 questions long. Another reality of dealing with cultures. You create what they want, you create what the partners are interested in, and you use a methodology that is appropriate for them. The women in Russia and the Tartessian Republic had no experience filling out surveys. My IRB committee at the University of Nevada wanted them to be able to fill out their own. It took us 6 months to persuade the IRB committee that what would work in a U.S. survey would not work within the Russian context. We had 26 interviewers who went throughout 7 regions of the Tartessian Republic and interviewed 1,018 women in 6 weeks. Interviews ranged from 1 hour long to 8 hours long. Women involved one another in gardening, in cooking, in family plans, in discussions with neighbors, in discussions with family members. So our concept of interview was not even appropriate within the context of the Tartessian Women's Health Survey. Being open to tailoring our methodology to work within the real lives of the people we hope to affect is critical. I go on to outline some of the key principles for community-based participatory research in the PowerPoint that I will allow you to refer to later. A critical issue is that a community-based approach builds capacity to affect positive change. It empowers people to do what is appropriate within their context, to make decisions that will work for them and that are sustainable within the context of their capacity. One of my favorite quotations in engaging in community-based participatory research or any global research is Nakamura's, that without knowing culture, it's impossible to know the people, and to disregard their cultural traits is to disregard them. I would further argue that to disregard them is to decrease significantly the potential for effective public health intervention. So how do we collaborate? We have to have a willingness to learn on all sides. We may know what needs to be done in terms of effective interventions, but our most effective interventions may not be culturally appropriate. In Zimbabwe, I had the opportunity to talk to women's organizations who are getting great input from Western researchers on the importance of condom use for the prevention of the transmission of HIV/AIDS. These women's organizations said to me, how do we communicate with our partners and let them know that is not a feasible strategy in our culture? The perception of right in terms of sexuality, the perception of who controls whose bodies, the perception of virility as a critical component of men's health was extremely important to these women. They felt they were the wrong people to be talked to, that women's condoms would not be effective because they would not be permitted by their husbands and spouses to use those, and that the initiatives to empower women were totally wrong-handed within the context of the culture. We need to respect diverse viewpoints. We need to be willing to compromise on non-essential items and negotiate essential items, because what is essential and non-essential in cultures varies significantly. We need to have significant patience in negotiating strategies to address identified issues of concern and appropriate verbal and nonverbal communication throughout. We need awareness and understanding of the diverse perspectives. We need to ground ourselves, apologize when we make mistakes, and continue to engage and communicate with best intentions. And we need to admit when we make errors. We need a consultative approach to research and public health intervention based on the interests and needs of our targets, not our assumptions about what our targets need. We need to be culturally sensitive, and we need to negotiate tailored programs. Media is a significant potential, but it's not the place to start. Media is only an effective public health promotion tool when it is consistent with culturally grounded interests and cultural use patterns, as well as the desire of cultures to have information from those perspectives. When Marshall McLuhan in 1962 talked about the global village, I'm sure he had absolutely no idea of the capacity that would be before us in 2008. Global public health is a very real issue of concern, as our abilities to interact, influence, and engage increase, our responsibility to do so in a respectful, responsible manner that takes into account the cultural interests, values, beliefs, attitudes, and capacities of our partners is more and more important. Thank you.